Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So do you remember when all you had to do to get a ticket to see your favorite band was to stand in line? The line may have been around the block, but at least it was a kind of fair game of first come, first served. Now, online scalping has become the norm, which has led to huge increases in ticket prices and frustrated fans seeing the word sold out within minutes of tickets going on sale online. What is causing such an upheaval? What is causing it? What should be what should be a straightforward buy and sell transaction? Well, it's not always that simple. My guest, John Seabrook, has an article in this week's New Yorker that looks at the business of live music. Hi, John. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks.
And in your article, by way of background, you point out that live concerts have replaced record sales as the linchpin of the music economy. Describe that change.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that the whole music business was run by record sales. The record sale was the sort of bedrock commodity on which everything else was built, and that included not just, you know, the amount of money paid to the artists, but all of the music industry professional salaries were paid by record sales. And records were a great commodity because you could sell 10 million of them and every one was the same. But now, with piracy, record sales have plummeted, and that means that the whole industry has turned to the live concert business to try to replace the gap left by the decline in record sales. But the problem is, I mean, in a nutshell, there are a lot of problems, but I think that the core of it is that the live concert is not the same kind of commodity as a record. You know, every single live concert is different. And a live concert is judged not just by the quality of the commodity, but by the quality of the social experience, which records never were. So you're trying to make this thing, which has roots in the 60s and was kind of social and political and hippie-ish, into this kind of the basic driver commodity for the whole industry, and it's not that easy. So that's kind of in a nutshell, I think, what's going on right now.
You have a stat in your article that 95% of all downloaded music might be stolen. I don't know if that's probably the high-end stat, but even if it's something less than that, it's an indication of how difficult it is for bands to make money off recorded music. So is the average professional rock band and professional any kind of popular music group touring more than they would have a decade or two ago because that's how they have to make their living more?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I think you want to make a distinction here between the superstar acts and the kind of up-and-coming acts.
Right.
I mean, for up-and-coming acts, touring has always been a way to get the word out there, and particularly in these days of radio not playing as much new music as radio used to play,
right,
it's kind of the only way to get the word out there. So that's kind of business as usual for the up-and-coming acts, but for the superstars, yeah, their income used to be much more based on record sales, and now they've seen, I heard stats that income is a tenth of what it was 7 years ago for the biggest acts. So they do have to tour if they want to continue to earn that kind of money. I mean, there's another stat in the piece looking at the Bruce Springsteen tour. Last year's Bruce Springsteen tour took in something like $210 million, whereas the new album has sold, you know, about $10 million worth. So, you know, you're looking at something that's 20 times larger.
And we talked on this show last summer about that huge controversy when tickets for Springsteen's concerts in New Jersey were almost gone immediately after going on sale on the Ticketmaster website, but they were available at inflated prices on Tickets Now, a ticket reselling site, which happened to be owned by Ticketmaster. Is that still going on?
Well, and then what happened, what was even worse, is that with the last round of Springsteen shows in New Jersey, this is what the piece is about, really, the tickets showed up on Tickets Now before they sold out on Ticketmaster, which is definitely not supposed to happen. I mean, yeah, Ticketmaster has made a practice of pushing people to tickets now when their show's sold out, and although there are obvious conflict of interest there, it never really exploded until this whole Springsteen thing at the Izod Center in May, when they actually started pushing people to tickets now before the show sold out.
How could they do that? How do you push somebody to a scalping site when tickets are available through the normal means?
Well, Ticketmaster's explanation was that it was because of a technical problem, that because there was a software glitch that prevented people from completing the transactions for the tickets on the primary market, the Ticketmaster push kind of inadvertently kicked in. I mean, you can believe it or not.
Yeah, right, software
glitch. Was their explanation. The other explanation would be they were just trying to collect the fees, which would be much higher on tickets now than they could make on the primary market.
So we're all angry at ticket scalpers, but we're going in the other direction as a society. New York just recently legalized ticket scalping, and Vic in Chester is calling in with, I think, another point of view. Hi, Vic.
Oh, hi. I recently enjoyed the Steely Dan concerts at the Beacon, and I believe you get what you pay for, but I also see that they want to control the environment there as well. At $170 a ticket, you can take photos, videos, anything you like.
You paid $170 to see Steely Dan at the Beacon Theater?
Yeah, and it was full, and it was full for 8 shows. It's going to be full. They're still playing.
What was the face value of that ticket?
$170.
Oh, that was a $170 ticket.
Yeah, that was it, you know.
Well.
And
so yeah, that wasn't from a scalper. Money, that was just the ticket price.
Yeah, but they don't need to scalp it because, you know.
I understand. That's a cheap seat at Yankee Stadium.
You know, I have another example. A few months back, saw Dr. Atomic at the Met, and I paid a good price for that ticket from the Met. When I got there to pick up my seat, they upgraded my ticket. They gave me a much better ticket at the same price.
Vic, thank you for your call. And you got to love a guy who goes to see Steely Dan and Opera John, don't you?
And Matt, right.
But I think there's a larger point that he was getting at. Even though that $170 Steely Dan ticket was bought from the box office, apparently, and that was face, why shouldn't promoters, scalpers, anyone be able to sell scarce tickets at whatever the market will bear? That seems to be what New York State law now says. This is a commercial business.
The problem is that the artists set the ticket prices, and a lot of artists don't want to charge market value for their tickets because they don't want to lose the relationship with the fan that they've cultivated over many years, partly through cheap tickets. So they continue to keep their prices below market value while asking for large guaranteed advances up front. And then that causes two things. It causes this explosion on the secondary market, and it causes Ticketmaster to have to charge these fees, which they kick back some of to the promoters and the venue operators, because they can't make money on the shows with the ticket prices being set for what they are. So, you know, there are all these kind of illogical things that exist in the. I mean, no one objects to paying $1,000 to sit on the floor for a basketball game. I mean, some people objected to the Yankees prices, but you're still paying a whole lot to sit up front. But in most concerts, you know, they don't scale the house that way. I mean, Springsteen sets all of his ticket prices at $95 and $65,
yeah,
which is really great. A bruise is generous, but it does cause all these problems on the secondary market.
Said
like Steely Dan's charging $170, so there's probably not a whole lot of tickets scalped because they're charging actual market value for at face.
Well, our last caller would probably say that's a bit of pretzel logic, wouldn't he? James in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'd like to call in that I have actually been boycotting the Madison Square Garden for the last 3 years because I find that when I go to Ticketmaster, unless I'm actually hitting the mouse button as if it was a Morse code telegraph, the tickets go straight to eBay at double the price. So what I do instead is, I'm not going to reveal my sources, but I have sources that can get me a high-quality video bootleg of that concert. And I get my bootleg from the sources and save myself the $150-plus dollars
yes,
for the concert.
Though you don't have the experience of being there with everybody and doing it live. Is there a solution that you recommend in your article, John?
You know, I mean, paperless ticketing is the current sort of state-of-the-art solution, and that is not necessarily going to be a long-term solution, but Ticketmaster is trying it for the Miley Cyrus concerts. That's where, you know, you have to use a credit card, which means that if you're a kid, you got to get your parents to buy the tickets for you, and if you don't have a credit card, you're screwed. And then you have to turn up at the venue with the credit card and a matching ID in order to get into the venue. So that means that, you know, you can't scalp tickets that you bought because you won't be able to get in. And we're going to see how that works at the Miley Cyrus concerts, whether it causes all these logistical problems or not. And if it doesn't, you might see that becoming, at least for the time being, the sort of state-of-the-art of ticketing. Now, in the long term, I just sort of feel ultimately the primary and the secondary markets are going to merge into one, and the whole pricing system is going to go to more of an airline-type pricing system where, you know, first-class tickets help subsidize the cheap seats in the back. But, you know, we're not quite there yet.
Paul in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Before the economic downturn, I was doing okay. I mean, here and there, I would get these special jobs waiting online to get premium seats. And it usually, you know, it's a service. Most people who can afford to pay someone to wait online will pay a premium on top of face value. I mean, it's a little shaky these days, but I think it's fair. When people who can't, you know, have the time to wait online can hire someone to stand on a cancellation line and get good tickets to a Broadway show or the opera or whatnot.
Or for some people, they have more money than time and
can't
stand online to get those scarce tickets, and so they'd rather pay the premium online or pay you to stand online for them. That's one segment of the population. Finnegan in Plainfield, you're going to get our last 20 seconds with your complaint about that Steely Dan show, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Actually, it's ironic. I was calling up staying amoral about the whole subject, but now that I sat here for 5 minutes and thought about it, I think it's ludicrous. It turns out that the tickets were running from $170 to $1,335. And, I mean, I was dying to see Steely Dan, but, of course, I can't even afford $170. You know, I work for a nonprofit. I can't afford $170 to see Steely Dan.
$1,335 face to go to the Beacon Theater?
Can you believe it? It was some kind of VIP package, obviously, where you got to meet the band for like 15 seconds.
I see, but they went all the way up to that. All right, John Seabrook, who wrote about the dysfunctional ticket business in this week's New Yorker. We have to leave it unresolved, don't we?
But, I guess we do.
As everything else. But we'll see what happens with that experiment at the Miley Cyrus sets. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.